Hi, everyone. Today, you're going to meet Frances, who's a very special guest who has inspired me personally with her strength and her story to continue to advocate for those who have gone through sexual harassment and assault. As I am a huge advocate about this taboo topic, and I really think that we need to talk more about it. We need to normalize the conversation so we can really start moving into that new paradigm and hopefully creating a better, safer environment for all of us in the maritime industry. So welcome, Frances. Thank you for saying yes to being here today with me.
Hi, Marianne. Thanks for having me on.
I am so grateful. I met Frances because she reached out to me after we did the Cosmopolitan UK article called The Dark Side of Yachting, where we talked about this sexual assault harassment on board. And there was a girl who shared her story, and then I was part of it. And so if you haven't read it, the article link is below, so check it out. And you reached out to me with your story, Frances, that really impacted me because it really opened my eyes to what I already knew, but it was like validation and proof that what I've been doing for the past 2 years, actively doing, is really, you know, it's actually making a difference. And I love the fact that you came from a very different sector of the maritime industry. And I think it's so important because I obviously talk about yachting because that's where I come from in the maritime industry. But this whole sexual assault harassment situation is across the board. And I just recently talked to Woman Offshore, who's more like the commercial side of the maritime industry. And she realized that, yeah, that obviously this is something that really impacts a lot of other sectors beyond where she has been focusing on. And not only that, but that these other sectors actually get impacted even more because there's less regulations than in the commercial sector, which already has not enough regulations. But imagine, you know, where I'm standing and, you know, where you were standing at the time. I'm going to give you the space to, yeah, just share your story with us so the public can have an idea of what I'm actually talking about.
Thanks, Mariam. I got interested because I was, of what had happened to me, but I did speak to them a couple of years ago, the organizers, and looked into safeguarding just to see how it stands and if it was effective. And the more I looked into it and the more I saw what was happening, and the stories that I heard on, with you and other organizations, other campaigners, it didn't look as if anything had changed, as far as I could tell.
Can I ask you to share a little bit about what happened to you? Obviously, you don't need to.
Yeah, sure.
Just so people have a little bit of a backstory.
Yeah, sure. This was in the early 90s. I just turned 17, just after my 16th birthday. I was 17th birthday. I went on, it was a sail training for young kids. So it was like from 15-year-old to 25-year-old, say, set up these international sail training opportunities. And I cut out a bit from a magazine. I sent it off. I got a place on a big ship and it was all quite exciting. And it went all right. I was one of the only young girls, as far as I could tell, on there. This is, say, the early 90s. Maybe it hadn't really kicked off for girls as much as it has now, but it was going all right. I was hanging around with, so it was a bunch of lads from the UK I was really hanging out with. And then on the last night we came into, the last night at sea, there was a party. They usually have a crew party that sort of, it was set up by, I think, some of the senior officers, and it had all the volunteer crew in it. And so we had a few drinks. I was asked to dance with some of the officers. I was told it probably looked rude if I didn't. I was really embarrassed, but I did, because I was encouraged to do it. And after, because I had a few beers and then I had some more drink poured into small glasses, it was clear liquid. And I was still really embarrassed about it. So I made my excuse to leave. And I said, I'll go to the bathroom. And so I went outside and there was a cadet waiting. I don't know if he was loitering and asked me to go with him. I made an excuse. I had the bathroom, but I came out. He was still there. And I just went. I don't know. I certainly didn't know what was going to happen. So I did, and I went into the function room, and there were a few of them sitting around a table, and it was someone's birthday, which I thought was a tenuous excuse. So I went over, I thought I'd just say hello. Like a teenager, you're a teenager, so you have these kind of innocent thoughts, and then suddenly I was surrounded by them, completely surrounded by them, and then more and more kept on arriving. And basically, it's what you'd call legally as a multiple perpetrator attack. In common terms, it's gang rape, and that's what happened. And it just, your mind just leaves the room. Just, I remember a feeling of somebody or something reaching into my stomach and just ripping out. And it was a very physical, ripping, serrated, ripping sensation of almost as if I can only describe it as somebody ripping your soul out, and you're gone, you're gone. And you do just what you need to do to survive, just to keep yourself breathing. Your body, your mind just takes over.
And I want to say that this is literally disassociation. And this is very important because in trauma, no matter what type of trauma is, you, like you said, it's like a survival mechanism where you have to, you just disassociate so you can actually survive whatever is happening in the moment. And it's very common, not just in the sexual assault area, but in any traumatic experience.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very profound feeling. I don't know what form flashbacks are going to take, but I have my own thing. I have my own kind of strange things that happen that I can definitely attribute to that event. And that's one of them. It's a really profound feeling. You lose yourself and you just do what you have to do to survive. And this is awkward for people viewing trauma and dealing with the after effects of trauma, because it doesn't look like you expect it to look. You're not kicking, you're not screaming. You have no agency to do that. It looks as if you're just there basically consenting, you know, because you can't do anything because your mind has gone. As far as people to be able to deal effectively on ships with trauma and the after effects of trauma, they have to know something about what trauma is.
Yes.
Because it's so unexpected. Behavior is so unexpected.
This is one of the things that I talked on the last show with Ali from Women of Shore, that we really need to bring, there's always a medic on board. There's always some sort of somebody who's in charge of this type of situations or any medical trauma situation. And they need to be trauma informed, and that's not really happening on their education. And this is so important. I'm so happy that you're bringing in your story and what it actually felt like to you and what it could potentially look like from an outsider point of view. Because it's important to know that this, just because it looks one way, doesn't mean that's what it is. And if you're not trauma informed, you don't know what you will be looking at.
So yeah, especially the aftermath as well, because I think probably the next day, I remember, I must have blacked out, because I remember a boy in white who, I'm listening, I don't know why I'm laughing. He was going, I just remember just going, please. And it was nice to have the opportunity to say no. So I said no, and he was, thanks. So he got my clothes and got me back to the bunk, I think. But the day after, you wouldn't. I, even though I felt, I suppose this is the realization where you feel almost like you're in a cartoon. Nothing feels tangibly real. But I was acting, I don't know, from an onlooker, I was going through the motions of what being normal was. So to an onlooker, you'd think, oh, that's what happened. Because I know there were people on there that knew it happened. There absolutely were. But to all intents and purposes, I looked like I was fine with it being a just turned 17 year old girl. Yeah, she's fine with it. But what 17 year old girl is fine with that? I didn't know it was possible. But my behavior would describe somebody who's fine. But that again is a coping mechanism after trauma. You just have to get through and survive. And you do just heal your way yourself apart from reality, and you just cope. So yeah, it doesn't look like, I didn't look like somebody who'd experienced that.
Well, the thing is, though, that when you are actually trauma-informed, you can tell very, very easily that, because you were saying, it looked like this. I was just going through the motions. I was just like in survival mechanism. And it may have felt that you were normal, but I can tell you, even though that's not what you may have felt like it was potentially looking like, it was not, because you are in a disassociated place. So you could tell, people can tell when somebody's here but not here because you're traumatized. That's what happens. Like when somebody, I don't know, like a car hits them. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh yeah, I'm fine. But you can tell they're totally not fine. But they think they're acting as if they were fine because obviously this is in their head. But the other person outside, the observer, even if you're not even trauma informed, you can tell there's something up.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I remember going, I had the next night an almost insatiable need to get drunk. And we did, I think myself and one of the guy trainees went, so we were offered bottle from one of the officers and we had to come buy it. And we had to go into his cabin to get it. And I didn't know why I was there. I just wanted to get out. Just get the drink and go. And so just that, and that's what I did. I must have wanted to just remove myself mentally from it. So yeah, it was just all.
That's what we do with alcohol. We suppress the emotions because it is a suppression. Yes, it is a toxic because people get intoxicated with it. It suppresses your feelings and emotions.
Yeah. Yeah, which it did. And I'm sure, but I think I knew that people knew about it. And what I suppose confused 17-year-old girl was everybody seems fine with it. So it must have been fine. And that's looking back. I don't think that is the case now. I hope not in this particular organization. But what troubles me, again, are the stories I hear. And I've been on them since. And the ship I went on sort of 20-odd years later was an exceptional example of how to do it properly. It really was fantastic. I think that should be held up as a template of how to do it. But then there have been ships I've been on and I've heard young crew with attitudes that I think, my God, this just hasn't changed. It really hasn't changed. I think one crew trying to impress the young trainee crew, and I won't relay the whole conversation, but the sentence ending it was, I haven't actually raped anyone. And it's just, yeah, exactly. And I just said, this is now. And although it's changed, it hasn't changed enough. And I know that they really are looking into it, but I've looked at the paperwork, they consistently refer to this kind of thing as harassment. It is harassment, but it's also assault. It's also sexual violence. And it's also rape. You don't just limit it to harassment. And I think if we flower up the words, we deny what's actually happening. So we need to be honest and say, this happens very rarely. It's a low risk, high consequence situation. Very rare.
You know, it's rare. That's the thing. It happens more often than we want to admit. Because if we admit that it does happen, then we need to take responsibility for it. And we need to make the correct changes in order for this to potentially happen less. Because of course, there may be always a perpetrator, but they can definitely happen less when the perpetrators know that there's a consequence to their actions. Because right now, there is no consequence pretty much to their actions.
And it doesn't seem to me that anything's enforced, because I know that everybody's got their code of conduct. Everybody's got their safeguarding policy. And they look great. When you read through them, they look very thorough. But it doesn't look as if anybody's been enforced. If somebody breaks the code of conduct, they're out. They're not just moved on.
It's just a paper with words. Absolutely. Yeah. And I want to go back to what you said earlier, that you went out the next day and you felt like as if, even though people knew that this had occurred to you, and I just really want to take a moment and just say thank you for sharing your story. And you're so brave, you're so courageous, and just freaking inspiring. And I'm like, I'm about to cry. So I just really want to honor you for taking the time to share this with my community. So going back to what you were saying, that you went out the next day and you felt as if people knew, but they felt like it was okay that it happened. I shared this with you before we started recording, and I just watched one of the episodes of Below Deck Mediterranean. I think it was season 5 or something like that, where one of the deckhands made a joke about rape that triggered the stewardess because she actually had been raped in the past. And she shared that she had also ingested alcohol and that basically she had been chained because it's almost as if the society says because she ingested alcohol, that happened to her. Because she wasn't, you know, it's like the same thing. Like I hear people say, oh, don't wear something that shows a little bit of your breast. Don't wear a skirt that's too short. You're provoking. No, if you can handle your urges, that's your problem. You know what I mean? It doesn't, me drinking or me having a short skirt doesn't mean you can rape me. You know what I mean? And I think this energy of it's that we feel maybe as a victim or survivor that people think like it's okay that this happened. I feel like there's a collective shame around survivors who have ingested some sort of, consciously ingested, obviously, some sort of toxic, because it's almost like as society collectively says, it's your fault versus actually it's not her fault or his fault, it's the perpetrator's fault. So what are your thoughts behind this?
Look, it happens in these cases that the burden will always be put on the complainant of having to prove that they did it, that they didn't consent. The burden of having to provide evidence will always be on the complainant. You have to prove again and again that you didn't consent to this happening, and not the other way around. It's never on how did you get consent. It's not on that. So it's old news. It's always been like that, and it's not changed, unfortunately. So it's, and anytime something happens, if we get a review, it's always on what can the vulnerable do to protect themselves? You know, all of the measures and procedures that are put in place, what can you do? But the responsibility is on you to keep yourself safe. It's not on what can we do to keep you safe. I've just, in one of the reports from this organization, I think there was a review and I brought in a youth group to come and have a little look. And I think it did say that safety assure isn't guaranteed. And that's absolutely right. We're not just talking about safety assure. We're talking about safety in the open waters as well, which needs to be considered because there is really no help if you haven't got something in place. But it means a constant dialogue with crew and trainees. What it comes down to is atmosphere, is awareness and care for each other, a buddy system. You need to look after each other. There needs to be somebody taking accountability for your safety. Not just we as trainees have to look after each other because we are at risk. Yes, you do have to you have personal responsibility to look after yourself, but that shouldn't be where the emphasis is placed. The emphasis should be placed on a kind of a broader authority looking after you, because this is upward of, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 kids doing this each year. There's a lot of them.
Why are we placing that responsibility on those who don't have the power to create the change, which in this case would be the kids, versus the organization and the facilitators and the trainees and all these people? Like, why are we continuously putting the burden on those who don't really have the capacity to create a safe environment for everybody on board? Like, we need to flip the coin. We need to start placing the responsibility on those with power that can actually make a shift and a change.
I was a kid when it happened, and I was, even though I knew by that age that people did bad things to each other, I did unfortunately know that, but I didn't know on this scale that it could happen. So as kids saying we need to look after each other, yes, brilliant, do that. But you need somebody who knows what can really go wrong to keep an eye out for you as well. And I'm sure that is happening. But it really needs to be enforced. Your code of conduct need to be enforced. It can't be left to
needs to be normalized. Like, we have normalized the perpetrator. That's what we have done. We have normalized the fact that you can do bad shit and get away with it. Why?
This is what
I don't know.
But this is what I heard. And on the conversation. And they were talking on this conversation that I was privy to, that are saying this is just what sailors are like. This is what sailors
do. Yeah, that's just yachting. No, fucking rape up people. Like, getting raped is not just yachting. Getting assaulted is not just yachting. Like, that shit needs to end. And we need to start normalizing that this is not okay and talk about it and start, like you said, implementing the conducts that we have in place that obviously are not in place, because if not, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So we really need to start taking action on all those safety manuals that we have and all that, you know, because I find it very interesting that people take it more serious on board the trash, the environment, all this stuff. And I think it's because they are going to be held accountable for it.
Right.
But then somehow they're not being held accountable for something like sexual assault or harassment. It's insane. And that comes from the what do you call it? The IMO, comes from the captain of the vessel, from the management, if there's a management involved, from crew, agents, like all the people that are getting all these people on board, they also play a role, and they also need to play a role for the safetiness of the environment. It's insane. So what, I know that you really got, you read the article, you got pumped, you're like, oh my God, I really feel like this is, I need to share my story. I want to reach out to the place where this happened to me. What do you want to achieve with sharing your story?
Yeah. It's just that, just to let the people, the authorities know that this really does happen. It's not something abstract. It's not something on paper of maybe this could happen, but while we're sitting around a meeting with our Danish pastries and our sparkling water, this isn't something that really does. It really does. When I went to speak, I did it off the cuff. I wasn't supposed to. It was a spontaneous thing. I just walked in. I said, I'd like to talk about safeguarding. I just felt compelled to do it. And I was told, to my knowledge, this has never happened. I hope not, but I know it's happened at least once. And it was comprehensive. I suspect there was another girl on board that it would have happened to. I think she was Scandinavian, around my age. I strongly suspect it happened to her. So there's possibly two. But of all the thousands and thousands of trainees, the hundreds of ships, blah, blah, I think to say, and to my knowledge, this never happened is...
I remember when you told me about you going in into the office and talking to these people. And by the way, like what you did is called intuitive, you know, guidance. And I applaud you for it, because it's like you heard your intuition. You're like, I have to do this. I'm going to do it. I go for it. So I remember you telling me that they were like, I know the captain on that vessel at that time, and that wouldn't happen under his command. And I'm thinking, like, you're literally telling the person who survived this shit, that's telling you, I've been through this. Literally, you're telling them I'm sorry that this happened to you, but I don't believe you. You know what I mean?
It was
like baffled me. I was like, wow.
I think probably they were a bit shocked when you're certified, like you don't really know what to say. And I suppose the first
and you don't say
form
anything.
Of I think the natural thing to do is protect and survive.
It's like, who are you protecting? You know what I mean? You don't even know this person. It's like, it's just, instead of being more welcoming towards what's happening, our immediate reaction for most of the people is to, like you said, is protect myself versus like the person that this happened to, that is vulnerably, courageously coming up and telling you.
I think I think possibly the risk is to deny it, is to undermine your own integrity, because you're just basically saying, no, it doesn't happen here. When you've heard it does, actually. So you have to have some integrity to say, okay, it does. And I credit to them. They are really looking into it and seeing how they can prove it, that the willingness is there. It's how to do it, I think, needs to be really drilled into. And
talking about that, how do you think we can better the safetiness of a vessel or just in the maritime industry when you're
you have to have people, you have to have specialists in their area, like all the training coming in to teach you. And that training possibly in this instance needs to be compulsory. People need to have to do it to be accepted onto the program. So it's things like the specialists, ask the specialists. Don't just have them as numbers in your book. You need to bring them in to talk to the people involved, to talk to the skippers, captains, crew, that they all need to know from the specialists how this works, what this looks like, and what to do. They need a first aid and what happens. What is it? The human factors analysis classification system. That's a really, you can almost change that into what happens for sexual assault. It's like a good framework of what goes wrong and how to cope with it. So, yeah, specialists, and you need to enforce things, please. So if somebody does break the code of conduct, they're out. They're not just moved to a different department. They're gone. Enforcement, recording. Recording needs to be done. I don't suspect it was done in my case, but it needs to be done. You need to know exactly what's going on there. So don't just cherry pick the low-hanging fruit, like the harassment.
One of the things that Ali from Women Assure also brought up is that we have, I believe it's called CTVs, if I'm not, cameras. We have them in the ship, like outside. Like usually it's like on the side of the starboard or port, maybe in the stern. So like, why are we not having this type of surveillance in the communal spaces? I'm not talking inside a cabin, but in the communal spaces, because if something does happen, you have proof of who went in, how it, like some sort of proof of who went into which cabin, who went to each room, how did they look, what was happening. And I think this is something that at some point they need to really start implementing.
Because yeah, I mean, I cannot.
Something that's going to hold other people, perpetrators, accountable because, okay, they're watching me.
Sure, I can understand the resistance to that, though, because they think, oh, it's invading my kind of private space and whatever.
It's like a communal space. You shouldn't.
Oh, yeah, sure. But like, I know that there'd be a pushback.
So,
yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. But I suppose there would be, understandably, there'd be resistance. But I understand it is a communal space. And these things, these things do happen. Sorry, there has to be some kind of protection for the people that it happens to or can happen to or will happen to.
Exactly.
So, yeah, if it has to be that, it has to be that.
So what do you wish for others that have been in your position? What do you wish they know or what advice can you give them?
It's just please tell somebody. It took me 20 something years. So please tell someone it isn't anything you did. It was done to you. And as far as your career goes or potential career goes, you have to say something because it's going to make you ill if you don't. You please say something. I beg you to say something to someone because it's easier now. It's easier now than it was back then because back then, I don't think in those days, date rape was even a crime. I think that hadn't even come in as a crime. So nobody was talking about it. It was something definitely to be shameful of. But now, hopefully, with people talking, it's going to be different. And they're going to realize, oh, God, it wasn't me. I had no agency in this. It wasn't something. It was something that was done to me. I shouldn't feel shame for this. Those people that did it should feel shame for it. And those people that are not saying anything, say something. Please, if you know something, please say something because you're not helping anyone.
The bystanders, yes.
Yeah, I know it's difficult. I know it's really difficult and confusing and you don't want to get into trouble. You don't want to get people into trouble that you might. It's all really confusing if you don't know, but just say something. Because there are so many people you can tell as well. There's IceOne, there's Safer Waves in the UK, and there's so many people now you can tell. So just say it.
Yes, I totally agree with you. So remember, it's not your fault and it's okay to speak up about it. And as a bystander, please do say something. Do get help for whatever. If you see there's something weird, say something to somebody. Like, figure out, like, whether it's the captain, the first officer, like, whoever you feel comfortable telling it to, please do authorities, whatever it is, because you can actually save somebody's lives. You really have the power. And it's so important because a lot of the times I think that it's like a moral compass as a bystander is you have to think, okay, I know my intuition is telling me there's something here, or maybe you are actually know that something happened. And then I don't really want to get involved with that, but you have to take a moment and think if that would have been me on the other side, what would I want for the other person to do for me? And more than likely, you want them to fucking talk and help you out. So do the same for your fellow people around you.
Yeah. Don't just say,
not doing anything is actually doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. Just say just something like, are you all right? Is everything all right? Just don't assume that if they look okay, oh, yeah, they'll be all right. They'll be all right. Yeah, only likely they won't be one way or another. So yeah, please look after each other.
Yes, absolutely. And I love that. So we're going to end the conversation with that note. Please look after each other. And I really want to extend the invitation to whoever is watching this that has the power to change regulations, to change and implement the conducts of safety in your vessel. Implement them. Take action. It's easy. It's not that complicated. We just need more people to do the right thing. That's really what it is. It's not that complicated. And for those who want to share your story, wisdom, knowledge, like Frances has just done today, you can click on the link below and get in contact with me, book a time, and we can share your knowledge and wisdom. Frances, thank you so much for being here today, for sharing your story, for sharing your wisdom, your knowledge. Yeah. Is there anything that you want to share with us before we go?
Oh, no, just to say thank you, Marianne. What you're doing is really good. It's taken 20 odd years for me to come across people doing this, and I really applaud you. I think you're doing great work.
I am very thankful that I can use my voice to advocate for those who haven't yet found theirs. And it is people like you that keeps me going. It is stories like you that inspire me. Thank you again for all that you have done and what you will do, because I know you. There's so much more that's to come. So I'm super excited for your journey. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mariam.
Okay, guys, this is a wrap. I'll see you next time here on the Sensor. I'm Mariam from Yachts Mermaids.